Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, my next guest has been cycling around the world on and off for the last 9 years or so. He's wheeled across much of the continents of Africa, Asia and Australia. He's now in the Middle East and he's journeying through Syria and Lebanon. It is, of course, a time of great strife in the region, so we'll find out how he's getting on because he's on the line. Tomás Macintyre Giagic.
Giagic, come to the heart of you.
Yeah, Gomahar Fad and Koiltu Anish, where are you?
I'm in Turkey at the moment. I got here at last Saturday from Lebanon. I kind of rode myself into a bit of a dead end in Lebanon, and I came to Turkey just for a bit of a break after a quite intense period between Lebanon, Syria, etc. And yeah, there's been some protests kicking off here against the government, so it's not really been much of a break at the moment. But
extraordinary. You travelled from very kind of dangerous zones and into Turkey, where you would assume it's safe, and it is safe to travel to Turkey generally, and now there are protests. When did you start off, or where have you been?
Yeah, so it's been kind of all over the place. I started in 2016, and it wasn't meant to turn into a world cycle at all. I'd finished my undergrad course in NUIG and then decided to go and do a bike ride across America just to see what it was like, test the waters. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I came back home after that trip. And yeah, just tried to go back to uni to do a master's course. Didn't work out. And then I said, bloody hell, I'll go again. So I decided to go to Africa, thinking like if I do one big one, then I'd like to do Africa, you know, just go jump into the deep end straight away and see what it was like. And yeah, I rode Africa for 7 months from Egypt all the way down to South Africa. And it was just an incredible eye-opening experience, you know, especially traveling through countries that were told not to really travel to. And I just saw a completely different side to the world and a different narrative to what we normally get told. And I was like, right, well, I want to see more of the world now. So I booked a one-way ticket to New Zealand to cycle home. And that's the one I'm still doing now. But obviously, COVID happened and I got delayed. And
you come back to Ireland.
Yeah, I've had to stop to work and save up. And it's nice to take a break because it does get, you know, it might sound ridiculous to people, especially once you don't travel long term like I do sometimes, but you kind of just get like travel fatigue, and you start noticing like that your interactions with people aren't the same, or you're kind of losing motivation, and you know, you're kind of forcing yourself onto the bike every day because it's obviously a huge physical toll on yourself, but also mentally and emotionally. And that's why after like the last stretch through Syria, Lebanon, I was just like, I need a break. I just need to switch my head off for a bit and just like book into like a hostel beside the sea and just chill out for a bit.
Generally, it's just you and your bicycle, basically.
Yeah. And you're constantly on the move, like day to day. You know, your biggest worries are just obviously keeping safe, finding, you know, making sure that you're eating well, getting enough water into yourself. And then, you know, by evening time, you're looking for a place to sleep. So you don't really know day to day where you're going to be sleeping unless you're in like a city and you pre-book a hostel or something. But most days, you know, you just cycle till sunset, try find a safe place to camp out of sight, you know, and then get going again the following day. So it's quite exciting like that as well.
You're a restless Kerry man by the sounds of it. And where's home when you do come home for the pause and to reset? What do you do when you come home? Who's at home?
My family, we have like a bar down in Kerry, in Ballyferrater. It's about 8 miles west of Dingletown. So it's busy in the summer. I just can't do Ireland in the winter anymore. I vowed to myself a long time ago, I'd probably never stay home for a full winter ever again. It's a good time to get away. And especially just while I'm still in this like travel mode and while I just want to get it all out of my system. But yeah, it's nice to go home for the summer. You know, there's a bit of buzz around, there's a bit of crack. There's obviously plenty of tourists down in Kerry. So you're kept busy all the time. And then, yeah, it's good just to go back and help my dad out with the bar. You know, there's food, there's the bed and breakfast. So there's enough to keep you busy for the whole summer.
And have you somebody there? Have you a gra behind?
I do. Yeah, I do. A Ukrainian girl. She's lovely.
Really?
So it's tough being separated like this, but you know, thankfully, she supports me and she understands that, you know, this is a trip I've been on for a long time and I'll probably be restless until the day I finish it. So, yeah.
She loves the sight of Ondangan down beside her. You're out of Kerry. Did she come in, by the way, before or after the war?
Just after it.
So she came as one of the refugees, essentially, coming out of Ukraine.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And she loves it down. Like, she's pretty much a local now. You know, everyone is mad about her. Everyone loves her. And she's working away and she's happy out there. So
and
it's
so
great.
Meanwhile, on this stint that you're doing, you alone and your bicycle, you hadn't planned on going to Syria. How do you accidentally end up going to Syria?
I know, it sounds a bit mad. So I was in the, so I went back in October and I was peddling around like, you know, UAE, Oman, Saudi Arabia. And when news filtered through about the revolution in December, like late November, early December, of course, I was keeping a close eye on it. And then, yeah, after Saudi, I was heading towards Jordan. So, you know, I was in the direction of Syria. I wasn't going to Syria. My plan after Jordan was going to Iraq, back to Iran, Armenia, Georgia, and then loop back into Turkey from the north. But once I was in Jordan, you know, I just, Syria just became so appealing. And I started to dig into it a bit more, but I couldn't find anyone who has cycled there in the last 15 years.
Wow.
So I pretty much...
For obvious reasons, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with the civil war and stuff. But I'd seen some other travelers start going back, but only to like Damascus and a couple of the cities. Towards the end of my time in Jordan, I was like, look, I have to make a decision. Like, and I was just like, it comes down to the simple question of like, why not? You know, when am I ever going to get a chance to go to Syria again? Who knows what's going to happen? It's still obviously extremely volatile there. So I didn't know, like, maybe if I come back in 6 months, it might be better, but it could be worse. So I said, I just rock up to the border with my bike and see, like, if they let me across. I was just like, I don't know if they were going to let me across the border at all.
And the border from where?
With a bicycle. From Jordan.
From Jordan,
so north
yeah.
of Amman.
So what happens
yeah,
at the border?
I got in.
They just let you in?
Yeah. No questions asked. Just stamped the passport and I just wheeled off. And from the get-go, it was as if you'd just been transported into a completely different universe. You know, you cross from Jordan, which is peaceful and stable at the moment. Then you get into Syria. First thing you see, just everything's destroyed. Buildings, like, they either have bullet holes or they're partially destroyed or fully destroyed. But the people are really, really friendly there. And of course, being on a bicycle, you know, you people looking at you, staring at you. But no one was being over-intrusive or anything like that. They were just wondering where I came from. And on my very first day, after like a couple of hours of cycling, I headed towards a town called Darar, which had only been bombed by Israel like the previous day. Mm-hmm. But a local guy stopped me, you know, invited me to stay with him, got to spend the evening with locals, because there's no outside of like Damascus, there's not like, and some of the other bigger cities, there's no real accommodation. So you kind of have to depend on local people.
My gosh. And what sort of research had you done before you arrived here?
Checking out what was going on. So I'd spoken to a few people who'd been there, but again, like, I'd only information for the city. So outside of the cities, I was completely in the dark. So I didn't know, you know, where to go. I didn't know which area, like, I kind of had an idea of, like, you know, like, where was going to be safe or not safe. But I was just like, I just have to depend on the locals, because, you know, there's roads not to go down. There's the checkpoints.
This is incredibly dangerous, what you're doing. Well, there's a government travel advisory from nearly every democracy in the world.
Don't go there. So that's why, like, I wouldn't actively encourage people to not buy bicycle, at least. I've had a few people message me about what's it like being there, and you're heavily limited. And I know it was obviously naive and stupid of me to go there, but I still just, like, curiosity got the better of me. I wanted to see what it was like. And in fairness, like, I had like 99% like positive experiences
from local people who did bring you into their homes.
Pretty much
incredible.
Every night apart from being in Damascus. And it was such a good insight, and they're so brutally honest about what they went through. And for them, it's just like a casual chat. You're sitting down drinking tea with someone and he's just like, yeah, my brother got killed, my son's gone, you know, extended family members just been taken. Like, if they were lucky, they were killed on the spot so they could bury them, but if they were unlucky, they were taken and they were just lost in this massive underground prison system that Assad had established in his forces. And people just, like, once they were taken, you wouldn't see them again.
They're speaking English to you?
It's a mix, but yeah, some of them can speak English quite well.
All right.
Other times then, like, I was in a town up near Malula. So Malula is the beautiful Christian town that's built into the hills. But locals told me of another kind of village nearby that was completely ruined during the war. So I said I'd go check it out. And when I got there, a local guy took me around. Like, he just came up to me in the street and basically, like, he hopped on his motorbike and beckoned me to follow him. So, of course, like, I did, because I was just like, I wanted to see where he was taking me. So he bought me, like, we parked up and he walked me around the town. Mm-hmm. Now, he was only obviously speaking Arabic to me, but I was kind of using Google Translate. And one of his sentences stuck out to me, of how resilient these people are, how tough they are, and how, you know, they will not give up. And he was just like, they bombed us, they killed us, we got away, but now we're back and we're not leaving again. Like, they can come back and kill us all they want, we're not leaving. Even if we have to sit on the ground and eat the dirt, like, we're not going again. And when you hear that from them, you know, and the passion in his voice, the determination, just the anguish as well of what he saw, what he went through, you know, his family members who died or who killed, his friends, his neighbors, you know, there's no...
These are remarkable first-hand accounts that you're getting in Syria.
Incredible. It was,
despite what obviously what you're admitting as the kind of foolishness of going around Syria, you get in and out safely and you arrive in Lebanon, which was stable at the time you arrived, and just as in Syria, there are bombings begin again. But being Irish in Lebanon, what's that like?
Irish people are very well respected, because the Irish peacekeepers in South Lebanon have done Trojan work, and they've really connected well with the local people. And we'll say, like, just even most recently, like during the war between Hezbollah and Israel, the Irish peacekeepers never left their base. You know, they had Israeli tanks right up against them, like facing them, pointing the guns at them, and they never got intimidated enough to leave. And the Lebanese locals, they have such respect, you know, because they were like, well, if the Irish are going to stand up for us, then, you know, it just kind of inspired them as well, I guess.
Particularly because we've lost Irish soldiers in Lebanon, obviously Private Sean Rooney, and the recent fight between Hezbollah and Israel was confined to the south of the country. So I presume you stayed away from that area. What did the rest of Lebanon look like?
I actually did go down to South Lebanon.
Really?
Yeah, so
why would you want to do that?
Again, just to see what, because it's not like, obviously, like, it's recommended not to go down there, but I just wanted to go down and see what it was like there, and to see some of the damage, and just to try to talk to some of the locals about what had happened down there.
Yeah. Is the rest of Lebanon peaceful?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you've got Hezbollah strongholds even up in the north. Like, when I went to Baalbek, where the famous Roman ruins are.
Oh, yeah.
That would be considered a Hezbollah stronghold as well. So you'd see you know when you were there, because there'd be flags flying and...
You're arriving in your bicycle.
Yeah, exactly. So I was stopped a few times, quizzed, but never once did I feel threatened by them. They were just wondering where I was going, where I was from. And then the regular local people, like down in South Lebanon now, for example, like, they're super, super friendly. And it's a beautiful, like, it's an incredible place to visit. It is so beautiful. Like, you're up in the mountains at 1,500 meters, 2,000 meters. Then you're dropping down through these beautiful, quiet countryside back roads. You know, I was cycling along the Litani River. Then I went to Tyre, because there's archaeology sites there, really famous ones, and I got to visit them, got quizzed a bit more down there too, because obviously, like, foreigners, obviously, for good reason, aren't going to these places. So when they see you rock up, and I suppose, obviously, being on a bicycle, you can't really hide yourself, you can't really blend in with locals.
They must be pretty shocked when they see somebody, particularly who's not from there.
They kind of were. But then, you know, again, like I said, they'd quiz you, and once they know you aren't a spy or anything like that, they were just like, okay, like on you go, you're okay.
Your family must think that there's a screw loose here.
Yeah, probably. And they're probably not the only ones. But, you know, when I started these trips, and when I realized that I wanted to see the world, you know, I did promise myself I wanted to see the world for the good, the bad, the ugly side of it. And it's important for me to see as much as I can and to experience, even if those experiences bring me to a bit of a wild side.
That's a mild way of putting it. You're in Turkey now.
I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it secretly. So,
when do you get back home?
I'm hoping to be back by June. So I've got plenty of time to ride across Europe. It'll probably take 2 months, but I'll do some detours and stuff. I'll probably be back by hopefully June. I don't really want to be in Europe in July, August, because it gets too hot and it gets too crowded and too busy and stuff.
It's not a war zone.
Yeah, well, that's it. I think it's going to be too peaceful for me. So I need to, I'm even half thinking of maybe biking up to like West Ukraine or something, just to get a bit of a fix and then chill out after that and just ride across
Ukraine.
The rest of Europe. So, yeah.
You have to joking.
Yeah. No. I can get in from Romania. But south and west Ukraine would probably be okay.
Ukraine is obviously a war zone. That'd be fairly reckless.
West Ukraine would be okay, I reckon. Obviously, I'm keeping
still a travel advisory on all parts of Ukraine.
But listen, get
home safe and well. You know you're in Egypt, but people can follow the Instagram documentation of your journey, Tomás's journey, on Bóthar Fada. Look after yourself, yeah. Tomás.
I will, of course.
Slánga fóill.
Thanks a million for calling. Slánga fóill.
Look, bye.
Email oliver@rte.ie.